although the bureaucrats are hate this type of social activity and trying to disrupt this and stop individuals from gathering freely as much as they possibly can, but still, despite these tyrants, free individuals prevail. And free individuals find a way to express themselves freely and to manifest themselves according to their own will.
What's going on, everyone? I'm John Chenault, and welcome to episode 2 of the Bitcoin Path podcast. This is a show where we have casual conversations about Bitcoin and self-sovereignty, and how this new magic internet money is changing the world and changing ourselves at the same time. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with Max Hillebrand. Max is an open source entrepreneur supporting several Bitcoin projects that build tools for sovereign individuals to defend their property rights, liberties, and privacy. He is educating his peers by sharing invaluable knowledge in several hundreds of videos online. He has an in-depth understanding of the sound monetary economics around Bitcoin and the value proposition of immutable scarcity in this age of anarchy and money. We get into some really intense conversation around what makes Bitcoin a completely unique phenomenon in history, around why digital privacy is so important, and what Max is most excited about in the Bitcoin space. You can find out more about Max at towardsliberty.com, and you can also follow him on Twitter at HillebrandMax, and that will be in the show notes as well. Before we dive into this conversation, I want to take a moment to shill an online event that's coming up soon. An essential part of anyone's Bitcoin journey is putting in the mental work to understand it from first principles. Depending on your background, this process can take weeks, months, or even years without any kind of guide. With Bitcoin's inevitable price increase over time, the opportunity cost for vacillating over this is staggering. That's why I'm hosting an intensive educational event. I'm gathering 6 of the best educators in the Bitcoin community for an immersive online conference, December 12th and the 13th, and I'm calling it an interactive deep dive, I'm trying to say Bitcoin as many times as possible, so you know it's only about Bitcoin. There will be no shitcoin, shilling, or anything like that. The speakers are Robert Breedlove, Max Hillebrand, Eric Kaysen, John Vallis, Dan Held, and Gigi. There are 15 interactive seats for those of you who want to engage with the speakers on a more personal level and raise your own questions and comments with each speaker after their talk. Then we have 100 observer seats for those who want to sit in on the conference and watch all the training and the conversations unfold. If you are interested in joining, you can check out more information at interactivedeepdive.com or go to our events page at thebitcoinpath.com. I hope to see you there. And with that, let's get into my conversation with Max Hillebrand.
Max, let's just start it off. Thank you so much for coming on and, you know, spending time to do this. I just want to say I'm really grateful for your intentional contribution to the education and to helping other people understand kind of the gravity of what's going on. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, John, very much for the invitation here. You know, as you said, the education is very important. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so interested in doing this specifically. It's quite a meaningful work and rather fulfilling. Specifically, you know, also with the main benefit of having fantastic conversations on the fall down the rabbit hole. So I think it's a net benefit for everyone.
100%. Well, to kick it off, so you have been actively walking the walk. You've embraced Bitcoin as the central money, as a central store of value for yourself and the main point of reference for a lot of your life. What has that looked like? I remember hearing somewhere else that you had been living completely, fully reliant on Bitcoin for the past year.
Yes, so Bitcoin has definitely been a very important part of my life for a while now, and more so with every blog that happens. So specifically over the last year or so, a bit more, I have more and more tried to subvert myself fully in this sound monetary economy, you know, as an entrepreneur, to really use this monetary asset to its fullest potential as the technology for resource allocation that it is. To summarize maybe the results of the experience is that it has removed a lot of uncertainty in my life. To be able to earn a monetary asset that nobody can take away from me without asking for permission, and to keep my capital and to store my wealth in such a good that is very liquid on a global scale for whatever good or service that I desire. That has been a fundamental you know, a hedge against uncertainty for me. I always knew that I have, you know, for example, 1 out of 21 million Bitcoin in my pocket, and nobody can take that away from me. And this is exactly the capital and the wealth that I control and that I have the power over to manifest it according to my will. And you know, to be able to verify that, not just to estimate that maybe this is the power that you have, but to actually no, this is my purchasing power. That it's been a very, very meaningful metric or system of valuation for me.
Yeah, that is so powerful. Like, I was actually reflecting on that thought last night. Funny enough, as I was falling asleep, it was knowing that I have this particular portion of the blockchain that it is assigned to me, that I have, to the extent that I'm able to secure it and verify that is within my control. I didn't realize how that would affect me before kind of like going into it. My interaction with money has always been just something that is there, that's useful, but you know, it didn't have that kind of emotional effect.
Yes, you know, bad money, specifically when it can fly under the radar, does quite a lot of harm on multiple levels, including the psychological level of the individual. Because so the main downside, of course, is theft, right? The persons who print money and who receive that newly printed money earlier, they gain your purchasing power, and they literally leech your power away from you. And this right. is theft, quite easily put. And this fucks you up on a long scale. You know, it's not nice to be constantly stolen from and constantly raped. That is not a nice feeling. Oftentimes you don't even realize what is the root cause for that depression, or just that anxiousness, right? That uncertainty that is manifesting in the everyday life of individuals. And until then, eventually you can consider that, yes, it is a problem of the money. And there is a solution to that problem that is good money. It's sound money that does not involve theft, where individuals are you know, sovereign and can defend their property and are not being stolen from by anyone, right? Neither directly or indirectly via inflation. These are all the different you know, powerful aspects that Bitcoin provides. It's truly a liberating technology.
Right. What's fascinating about it is it's hard for the outsider looking in, for someone who's just kind of like learning about this and wondering what Bitcoin is. I understand the difficulty that a lot of people have kind of getting their minds around it, because money is just kind of this hidden part of our world. It's something that people use every day, but they don't really think about of like how it's actually affecting them.
Yeah, exactly.
With some friends, yeah, like with friends that I've talked to, I'll say something like, "No, the money is the problem." In a lot of these ways, it's almost like that's too simple of a statement for them to get their heads around.
Yes, I think that is because just you get used to certain things, right? The status quo is very convenient. And eventually that's just how things are, and you no longer question it. This is with any technology. Think of any other simple technology like running water. It's super fucking convenient, incredibly convenient, and super useful, and we ought to be grateful for it every day. But, well, it's just running water. You just open the tap in the home, and that's it, right? You don't care about it. It's not a big of a deal, but of course it is, right? It's a huge enabler, and that is with any type of technology, electricity, engines, of course, computation technology, and monetary technology, right? All of these tools, when they function properly, they should just function under the hood by default without you needing to take care of it manually, right? It should just work simply. Of course, with a bad technology, right? Then all of a sudden it breaks. It breaks constantly, and it brings you all types of trouble. This is where it's very important for individuals to choose which technologies to use, right? And which of these technologies to make the default.
Right. So you are choosing to make Bitcoin the technology that you rely on, right?
Yes, exactly. Because I mean, by far, it's just the best monetary asset that I've ever seen. I've did my fair share of studies in monetary theory, and the extent to Bitcoin's awesomeness is breathtaking. And we're still discovering more and more nuances of this magical cyberspace money. It's breathtaking. Of course, I want to have as many Bitcoin as fucking possible, and nobody's gonna stop me in my quest to stack more sats. Right? So yes, for sure, I want to get more, and I want to hold as many as is just possibly reasonable for me. And this means I gotta be productive, right? I gotta earn some, and of course I have investments that I need to take in order to be productive, right? I need to buy stuff so that I can earn more money. This is then where, for me as an entrepreneur, Bitcoin comes in as a cash flow management. And I have my expenditures are accounted for in Bitcoin. I know exactly how many Bitcoin I had to spend for whatever thing that I bought as well. But then also on my income side, right? Whenever I get paid, I demand to be paid in Bitcoin. And now I can make, as an entrepreneur, an actual profit statement. Right. I spent I don't know one Bitcoin, and I received five Bitcoin in earnings. Well, then I made a four Bitcoin profit. Now I can actually say it is not just in the nominal amount, right? But I can also say it as a purchase of the as a percentage of the money supply, and as the true purchasing power. I have 1 out of 21 million Bitcoin I've invested, and I've received 5 out of 21 million Bitcoin. Right now I've made that 4%. Gain here, at least I've made that 4 Bitcoin out of 21 million gain. It's quite a interesting and phenomenal tool to actually find out if the stuff that you're doing is profitable, if it actually creates value, to destroy and consume value.
Yeah, what a concept, right? Can you briefly explain, like, why does Bitcoin have this superior quality? Why are we able to truly know that I'm creating value because of this, because I'm documenting that with Bitcoin? And why is that better than being able to do that with, say, US dollars or the euro?
Yes, exactly. So the question is, when is value actually created? And praxeology in Austrian economics basically teaches that this is a subjective value judgment, right? Every individual himself has his unique preferences of his current situation, right? So the individual is in a state of uneasiness. He has problems, right? He has stuff broken, and now he has the entrepreneurial spark, the genius to look out in the uncertain future and estimate multiple different potential outcomes that might occur in the future based on his actions, right? So he has different ways on how to act, and each of these ways will lead to a different outcome. And now the individual makes a value judgment subjectively, ordering marginally all of these potential outcomes in finding out what is the best outcome for me in the situation. With what action can I improve my current situation the most, right? And where is the opportunity cost basically the greatest? Where do I actually spend and focus my time on? This is, of course, a extremely, extremely difficult question, right? To find out what you really want, and to see which of the methods gets you to that goal with the most certainty and most rigor. It's a very, very difficult question, but it's one very much worth asking.
I have definitely been asking myself that question over and over again, especially over the last 6 months, which brings me to this other, topic that I'd love to dig into, because all of this does relate, I think, very tangibly to the situation that we're in right now as people on Earth, right? Where, and just kind of speaking from my perspective, I have seen just massive overreaches from the government in terms of limiting people's travel, limiting people's right to gather with each other. You know, the government overreach is just part of it, but you and I are also aware of the massive amount of money printing and issuing of new debt that is going on. There is so much uncertainty in the world that the certainty of Bitcoin just shines as this bright light in the midst of it all. I wonder if you have any thoughts about like what is currently going on in the world and how that relates.
It's nothing surprising. It's nothing new. The mafia right. is stealing from people and the looters are looting. This is nothing new. Governments tax people and governments inflate the money supply and governments harass their slaves on whatever a possible topic they can. And there are phases of more and less overt fascism. And so the last 100 years, we've lived in a fascist tyranny pretty much nonstop, and there were many different phases to it. Right, we had very overt fascism as in Hitler's time, then of course the extreme communism, or then now the corona fascism as we've seen. Though fundamentally, it's always the same thing. It's a group of people trying to steal from others and trying to dictate them how to act, basically. That's it. Right? This is the value is being destroyed. There's one individual who acts violently on another individual so to change how he is adjusting his values, right? And to hinder his free choice in how to act. Right? This is where we provably destroy value when there is... when you actively interfere in that process of a free will manifestation of each individual to act according to his will. And this is what we just see very overtly, right? Every government is putting its subjects into prison at home and hindering what goods and services to be bought. But again, it's nothing new. This shit has been going on for hundreds of years. And yes, it is fucking terrifying. It is absolutely horrible. It is a tyranny on a colossal scale, and the consequences and the devastations of individual life and property is appalling and frankly disgusting. So absolutely, these individuals partaking these actions of quarantine and of obligated mask wearing and a hindering of free individuals doing commerce, this is utmost evil and will be punished for sure. Hopefully sooner rather than later. But again, it's nothing new. It has been going on for a while. It's just that this time it's a bit more overt and crazy, and hopefully more people are getting pissed off.
I think they are. And just based on, purely anecdotal evidence and my own personal observations amongst my friends, there's been a lot more openness. I've typically been sort of couched as more of the conspiracy guy in a lot of ways among some of my friends that I open up to about this kind of stuff. And in a lot of ways, many of these people are starting to be a lot more open to conversations about what's actually going on, and kind of even asking me more questions about it. So that's really encouraging to see.
I think with heightened or with increased harassment comes also an increased understanding of the evils of harassment. Right? And the more right. you're being stolen from, the more you're going to be angry at the thief. And when the thief goes fucking crazy, as they did recently, well, you're going to be really angry. Hopefully, you're going to be angry enough to kill the thief and to put an end to it.
For me, when I started learning about some of these things, like reading The Creature from Jekyll Island, it was very daunting. It was something that was very emotionally draining because I was realizing all these things were true, but it felt very hopeless. Like there's nothing that I could really do to protect myself from the effects of this. And so my question for you is, as someone who's been actively, what we might say, exercising your individual sovereignty, what would you say to someone who is asking the question, like, isn't this hopeless? Like, don't the marauding gangs or that lead our society that are looting us, don't they have too much power at this point? What hope is there for an actual free society, an actual like flourishing of human freedom?
Well, it seems that a condition of humankind is somewhat permanent, that the same tricks work over and over and over again. And specifically, the tactics of fascist tyrants seem to be working extremely well in convincing people and acting differently. So it seems that this will be continuing for quite some time. And of course, I acknowledge that it's to an appalling degree, right? The amount of theft that is going on an individual level is staggering, absolutely staggering. But still, I do see hope in that despite the tyrant having this much power, and despite the tyrant being able to do this monetary warfare on such a grand and colossal scale never seen before in humankind, still there are pockets of individual liberty where dedicated individuals can opt out of the first realm of tyranny and aggression and live a free and a prosperous and a productive and a profitable life elsewhere where these looters do not operate. And of course, Bitcoin is a prime example of this, right? Despite the fiat empire being in its dying last rattles, completely printing to the quantities of money never seen before. Still, there is a pocket of freedom. There are dedicated individuals who are willing to stand up and to fight and to die for their individual right to express themselves and to demand to be paid and to be respected and valued in a mutual beneficial trade. And this is what gives me actually hope. And of course, Bitcoin just being one example, there are pockets of freedom everywhere. As we mentioned earlier, right? In most every living room by now, everyone is pissed off about the tyranny and is voicing active dissent, right? And voicing an opinion that is not allowed and doing things that people are not supposed to. How many people do you know, right, who meet a bunch of friends in their living rooms without any masks and hugging each other, right, and eating together without any problems? Although the bureaucrats are hate this type of social activity, right, trying to disrupt this and stop individuals from gathering freely as much as they possibly can. But still, despite these tyrants, free individuals prevail. And free individuals find a way to express themselves freely and to manifest themselves according to their own will. And this is what gives me hope this fight of oppression versus freedom is one that will be. This also means that there's always some pocket of freedom and that is worth fighting for.
What are the particular pockets of freedom that you yourself, that you were engaged in the most? I know Bitcoin is one of the main ones. But for someone who's very new to this understanding, how would they even approach engaging in this new world?
Well, I hope to again reach a point where free individuals more and more collaborate together and actually conduct business peer-to-peer directly. I think this is one of the beautiful things that has always been there, but that Bitcoin kind of highlights and incentivizes. Right? So where are pockets of freedom? Well, in the market. Right? Whenever you buy your groceries, whenever you pay for your rent, right? Whenever you hire people to do a work for you, this is a pocket of freedom. This is where mutual beneficial exchange comes in, right? Where individuals come together to trade and to be productive together. Of course, though, even this market has been hijacked by the tyrants, and there are more and more taxes on every level being applied and levied. However, of course, there is still a flourishing black market where individuals trade freely without asking for permission and without giving notification to the taxman and without snitching on each other steal more. And this is quite a nice benefit that, again, is happening since forever, even today, amongst this high level of tyranny, for many individuals choosing to do goods, to provide goods and services to each other in a prosperous way.
That's really exciting. So one question I have is for you, as someone who's really focused on digital privacy and security as well, that's becoming a growing concern because engaging in a lot of these very normal human behaviors of just freely talking with each other, meeting groups, trading goods and services. There are people, obviously, the looters have a particular interest in being involved and in regulating these types of interactions and restricting them. And what I'm finding is that a lot of the tools that we use to communicate with each other, whether it's social media, even very normal online-based websites, are still sort of feeding through rails that are heavily centralized and controlled. So we're seeing like cancel culture kind of proliferate in different social media platforms that are all they're private companies that are just controlling and manipulating their feeds for their own best interests. I guess my question is, where does someone start if they want to try to start establishing a little bit more digital privacy for themselves? Because we got to start somewhere.
Yeah, well, let's start with definitions. What privacy actually is, right? And that is for me the aspect that of individual free choice to selectively reveal oneself to the world, right? To be able to choose on how to interact with other individuals, and to have the choice to not interact with some individuals, right? And to do interact with others, right? That exclusivity with whom you spend your attention, right? With whom you interact. That is privacy, right? So what is a state of not privacy? This means when another party can force you to reveal yourself in a way that you do not want to, right? To tell a story that you don't want to tell, to do a certain thing that you don't want to do, to interact with certain people that you don't want to interact with, right? All of this is a state where the individual is not private. A different name for the state is slavery, right? You're being stolen from, you're being harassed, you're being raped. That is what a not private, a revealed individual that is vulnerable to others, right? So this is inherently in a dilemma that there, as soon as other individuals are in the picture, as soon as you interact, you have to live with the consequences of the actions of these other individuals, right? So a free individual has that power of choice with whom he interacts, and therefore a control on the consequences that will come back to him, right? So this means a private individual that is not yet revealed to an attacker, right? The attacker does not know that this individual exists and that he owns 1,000 Bitcoin, right? So he does not know this. Then the attacker cannot come and attack him, right? He cannot come and harass that individual because he doesn't even know that the individual exists. So that private individual is shielded from the potential attack because, frankly, nobody knows that he even exists. Right? So this is where privacy is interesting, right? That aspect to control the information that others know about you. This is getting more and more difficult in cyberspace as we are dealing with more and more information, right? And the information is flowing at a much higher rate and much more information is being created per second. So here we have to somehow be much more cautious on how we engage in cyberspace, what information we reveal about ourselves. Even the small metadata of just small things, small habits that actually do reveal on a large scale when a huge amount of data is being involved can lead to quite serious potential attack vectors where individuals can be harmed.
Yeah, it's a totally different paradigm than what most people, and myself included, are very used to living with. As one of my close friends back in high school once said, he's like, the sooner you just let Google run your life, the easier things will be. the better your life is going to be. And that's kind of like, that's kind of the sentiment of a lot of people, is where we just kind of trust the software companies and the larger data conglomerates with everything, because they're providing a very useful service for us. And I guess that's where the conflict kind of arises, because as soon as you start to care about this kind of thing, it becomes kind of an uphill battle. I guess in my experience, it's felt as though I'm trying to swim upstream when I'm trying to create more of an island of privacy for myself.
Yes, exactly. It's such a difficult question, a difficult battle. Specifically, because as you said, the service that these trusted third parties provide are damn useful, right? And that's why individuals choose to use the services, because there is some value that they create, right? There is a trade-off, of course. They give up a bunch of sensitive information to a third party that can be malicious, that can be hacked and attacked by a malicious actor. But in exchange, they receive a useful service. Right. So that is, as always, a dilemma. Right. Again, that is the aspect of interaction. To interact with another individual means that you do reveal yourself to some extent. Right. Otherwise, you could not interact. If the other person does not know that you exist, he cannot act with you in any way or form. So there is always some revelation of information in any interaction amongst individuals. The question is the trade-off worth it? Right. Is actually the information that you give up worth the service that you receive in exchange? This is something that has to be asked, right? And of course, specifically in software development, it is much, much easier to build a centralized service where there is a client-server relationship, right? Where one client reveals information to a server and then interacts with this server. This is a very nice way of building software, and it works. And we can build beautiful and useful systems with it. However, more and more, we also can develop the tools that provide similar and even better services without relying on that trusted third party. And this is where self-hosted, censorship-resistant software comes in, right? Free software that individuals can run themselves without needing to trust a third party with any type of information. This is a very, very interesting concept. But the main battle here is that it's very damn difficult to build these services, right, where you do not have to trust a third party. So it takes much, much, much more research, much more development and dedication by individuals to build and to develop these platforms or these softwares that actually do provide meaningful and useful services without sacrificing the privacy of the individual.
Right. So what are some of the particular projects that you're really excited about? I was just thinking about this the other day, that because these decentralized or open source projects take so much time and research and effort from and cooperation from like so many different people to create, they're much more delayed, right? But once they're created, they're much more like extremely robust and have staying power, like BitTorrent and Bitcoin, obviously, and Linux. It seems like in the progression of the internet, these centralized platforms have kind of had a head start in a way of creating the user experience and the amazing interactive technologies that people are so used to. And so they've captured a lot of people's attention and time and energy and money. But the potential for open source software to catch up is rising as a possibility. I'm just wondering, like, what particular projects are you really excited about?
Yes, I think there are two specific projects that kind of tie nicely to our previous conversation that are very worth mentioning here. And there are two Bitcoin privacy wallet implementations, Wasabi Wallet and Join Market. And these two, first of all, are two great cypherpunk pieces of software that value the privacy of the individual user tremendously and who are actual tools to defend that privacy and to be very careful with what information to reveal about yourself to the network of peers here, for both, of course, other Join Market users, as well as the Bitcoin network in general. And interestingly here, these two very phenomenal pieces of software use a very different approach, because one piece of software took, let's say, the very difficult approach of trying to build a decentralized network that does not rely on one single trusted third party, but where the interaction among the users is more decentralized, right? That is Join Market. Here we have just a group of users who divide themselves in market makers and market takers, and they interact. And there is not one single user or one single individual or company in that project that is the main core. Right? There, it is an actually beautiful decentralized CoinJoin mechanism and protocol. Very, very beautiful. And the other side, but incredibly complex to build. Incredibly difficult. I really do not envy the peers working on this. It's incredibly complex.
I can imagine.
And then there's this other software project, right? Wasabi Wallet, that is also a very privacy-focused Bitcoin wallet, where, again, individual free choice on what to reveal, and specifically to reveal as little as is reasonable to any third party, is applied here as a first principle. However, this is a centralized project. So there's one coordinator that the user connects to, right? And only this one coordinator. You can choose amongst coordinators, but throughout the process, this is always the one coordinator that you use. And so there is a third party, right, involved. And it's the same one for most users, right? However, the design of the software is done in a way that the trust of this third party is reduced as much as reasonable. I've done a lot of ongoing work in progress research on how to further reduce that level of trust for the third party and to reduce the amount of information that is being sent to this third party. But again, the main reason why Wasabi, the project, chose as a centralized model is because it is easier to implement. Right? We can do a lot. We can build a lot more at scale and bring much more users together in a centralized coordination process compared to a decentralized one that Join Market uses. It's very interesting and very nuanced trade-offs, and I'm not saying that either of the projects is better. They're very different in this nature, in both very beautiful displays of free softwares that, again, have different strategies on how to defend individuals' privacy. And I think both are very worth checking out.
Awesome. I haven't heard, I mean, obviously I've heard of Join Market and Wasabi Wallet and been very interested in learning more and interacting with them. I actually downloaded Wasabi Wallet on my machine here. So I plan on engaging and experimenting with it and learning. But that's really that's the process, right? As I just reflect on this, I feel like so much technology has been just spoon-fed to us as consumers. And I think a lot of people are, again, myself included, are very used to new and innovative technology being something that they just like get in a box and everything works and they just kind of go along with it and they're not really challenged. But this is a very different way of interacting with technology because you really, with Bitcoin, you need to take personal responsibility for your own education and for your own understanding of what's going on. Is that something that you see as well?
Oh yes, absolutely. Bitcoin is pure self-responsibility. Okay. Right, because Bitcoin again inherently is such a pure individualistic architecture to its core. I mean, so fundamentally, what does it mean actually to use Bitcoin? Right, so this means to run a full node, right? And when you run a full node, so first of all, you choose which full node implementation to run, right? And specifically, which consensus rules to follow, right? So you choose a software implementation of a certain consensus rule. And you can choose, of course, the Bitcoin consensus rules or any other shitcoin that is out there, right? This is your first free choice, which consensus to follow, which rules to adhere to, right? How do you define the property rights that you are willing to engage with, right? So what are the definitions that defines who owns what, basically? If you adhere to Bitcoin consensus, right, the Nakamoto consensus rules, then you download and install a client of this rule set. So this can be Bitcoin Core, Bitcoin Nuts, LibBitcoin, or whatever it is, right? There are multiple different implementations that all follow this exact same rule set. But still, you define for yourself the property rights conditions of the monetary asset. Right? And in the next step, your full node will connect to a network of other individuals, of other full nodes that are running. Right? And it will check if these other full nodes adhere to the same rules as you do. Right? And if there is a node out there that breaks your rules, if there's a node that has a different rule set, right, that is not in consensus with you, that follows a different monetary coin, basically, then you kick him off the network, right? There's no Ethereum node on your Bitcoin connected to your Bitcoin node, right? That's a fundamentally different system. I disagree with all the other monetary rules that are out there, but I specifically only agree to Bitcoin, and I enforce that. My node is not connected to any shitcoin node. It is only connected to Bitcoin nodes, right? Because these are my peers. These are my brethren with whom I want to trade with, right? So this means you define your own rules, you verify that everyone else is on the same rules too, and you enforce these rules. Meaning, if anyone breaks the rules, you kick him out of your own network, right? So this is pure self responsibility, right? You do everything here. You do not trust a third party. You do not rely on any outside verification. You do it yourself. And if you fuck up, either in the verification of your rules, or of course then in the private key management, this is your problem.
Yeah, that's a grave lesson that thankfully, like I've been blessed so far not to have mismanaged to a great extent, but it's definitely something I'm very cautious of and wanting to learn more, obviously, and treat this technology with respect. It can be very unforgiving, right? It kind of correlates to nature, right? As I read you talking about natural law. Grew up in California. I was at the beach all the time. I grew up kind of surfing and just being in the water a lot and being out in on camping trips and just engaging in nature. And I was always I always loved it and had so much fun. And there were times of such joy by the natural world. But at the same time, if you're in the wrong spot at the wrong time, you can get wrecked. You know, especially the power of the ocean can just being out there with some big waves coming in, it really puts you in your place. It's almost like Bitcoin is a new force of nature that needs to be dealt with, or that each person really needs to decide for themselves how they're going to interact with it.
Exactly. And Bitcoin is a weapon. It's a force multiplier, right? And individuals will use this force multiplier And this means that they are much more powerful. This is both a huge opportunity as well as a huge threat, right? How will you use this weapon? Will you use it to your own prosperity and to your own defense, right? Or will others use it on you and use it to your detriment, right? And this is the case with any technology, with any weapon, with any tool. As soon as a better tool arrives, the other tools kind of get obsolete, and the people who stick with using the other tools are less productive, right? And they are less valued. However, of course, the early adopters and those who pioneer in these new tools, they gain a huge benefit, and they can create much more value and bring much more prosperity and manifest themselves much more according to their desires by utilizing these more powerful tools. Of course, you have to decide on how to use Bitcoin. You cannot ignore it. It is what it is. And Bitcoin is out there and it is a beast and it will not stop existing. So you have to decide, do you use Bitcoin or do you not use Bitcoin? And you have to be cautious that others have this option as well. And nobody can stop others from making a free choice here and starting to earn Bitcoin. So this is the thing. Right? And as soon as others demand to be paid in Bitcoin, but you don't have any Bitcoin, well, then you have a problem, right? If you only hold shit, but nobody wants the shit that you have, well, that's bad for you, right? So be early in acquiring the precious new stone that is Bitcoin, and stack as many sats as possible to then, in a point of future where everyone demands to be paid in Bitcoin as the only option, as the only reasonable choice. As everything else is gone to shit, then you are prepared to acquire the goods and services that you do desire.
Yeah, Max, I love just talking to you because sometimes I feel as though I'm a lonely like person out here where I have these somewhat eccentric beliefs and knowledge, I guess, of what's going on. And so with this understanding that like this is very important to acquire as much Bitcoin as possible right now, I want to try to help other people to understand this, but it's somewhat difficult to do, I've found, without just sounding like a crazy conspiracy theorist or a religious fanatic. And so I have fun with it. I just talk. I like to joke around with my friends about it, but there is a kind of a serious part of this where really, if this is not something you're taking seriously, you probably should. I wonder how you approach or interact with people who are not necessarily on board with Bitcoin. Do you make it a point to try to educate them or do you just kind of wait for them to ask you questions?
Well, you know, when you see that there is a train and it's running against a huge cliff, and you see that early, and there are a bunch of people sitting in the train not noticing this, you kind of feel a bit obligated to tell them, to like, hey, watch out, there is a huge cliff before you jump off the boat, right? Ultimately, you are going to jump off the train, right? Because you're not stupid. But on the way out, you probably have the courage to tell a couple others to come with you. And specifically, in a monetary network, because again, we rely here on a network effect. The more individuals demand to be paid in Bitcoin, the more individuals provide their services and goods for Bitcoin, meaning that the individuals who have Bitcoin can acquire all of these goods and services. So the more individuals means more trade, right? More opportunities, more possibilities, more division of labor. It's a beautiful thing. So we're very much incentivized to onboard more and more individuals to Bitcoin because this means that our monetary asset becomes more useful, right? We can trade it for more goods and services. Ultimately, the purchasing power of the good and service of the money goes up, right? This is good for Bitcoin, basically. Not just as a kind of a, let's say, ethical or moral obligation to tell people to get the fuck out of that train, but also it's to your huge benefit because more monkeys is kind of better because you can solve more problems.
Right.
So that for sure is, I think, important. And of course, education. And education is that key aspect of not just blindly, you know, throwing people into a new paradigm, but actually educating them about the failures of the old paradigm and the first principles and the logical consequences of a complete new architecture of monetary theory and individual interaction that Bitcoin is. And this completely monumental shift, this leap forward in understanding of individual interaction and the incredible opportunity that this tool presents to us to really understand this. Then it kind of becomes natural to want to earn Bitcoin, right? And to provide any productive good and service that you can to others in exchange for more Bitcoin.
Right. Yeah, that's it's so true. The just wanting to help people, and that's what is so fascinating. I'm just constantly like in awe of this, how our incentives are just all in line with both our own self-interests and the betterment of humankind. In this network, it's very beautiful. It makes me look at it almost as a spiritual revolution as much as a monetary one. Do you feel that way?
Yes, I do. I do think so. But mainly because the fundamental spiritual or ethical constructs of each monetary assets are so different, right? Keynesianism and a modern monetary theory is literally a pyramid scheme designed to steal as much from the majority of individuals as possible, right? So it's literally a sinful technology, right, that optimizes for that tyranny and for the looting. It's insane. It's really fucking insane.
Completely built on lies.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, it's so ridiculous, and people buy it. It's actually hilarious. you know, and then you have Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And Bitcoin is just so fundamentally different, right? It actually is a weapon of individual defense. Again, it empowers the individual to define, verify, and enforce his own property rights without any trusted third party. I mean, holy fuck, that is so fundamentally different than the fiat empire. It could not be more the more polar opposite, you know, but as above, yeah, so below in the sense. This really is such a fundamentally different technology. That yes, it brings a fundamental shift in individual thinking, in individual aspects of morality and ethics. All of these nuances of individual life will be touched and altered by the consequences of sound money manifesting.
Yeah, that really brings to mind the image of polarity and the role of polarity in our psychological development and in our society and development of ideas. On the one hand, right, we have the fiat monetary system based on central banking and manipulative policies, and then on the opposite end, we have an individual empowering force that is Bitcoin. You know, I wonder if, in some weird way, I'm almost appreciative of the old system of the massive fiat extortion that's taken place, because it's provided the incentive and the impetus for people for genius cypherpunks to create a new monetary system that maybe thousands of years down the line, maybe we would have created it after we got tired of trading gold, but it perhaps has accelerated the development of it. You know, I'm trying to look at like the positive side of things, you know, hopefully will bring us towards a new trajectory of positive development in human society. As I think about that, I'm wondering what your perspective is. And there seems to be potential routes that we can take as we're all fumbling through this whole COVID hysteria and more government oversight. There seems to be like a dystopian trajectory, but there's also a light at the end of the tunnel and a lot of amazing things happening at the same time. I'm wondering if you could describe what are the dangers that you see? How bad can all of this get? Just to kind of elaborate,
I think it can get quite a bit worse. The death rattle of a fiat empire is quite long. I mean, Rome fell over centuries, right? I think it gets quite a lot worse before it can get better. In parts because of economic theory, right? We've had a 100-year fiat money supply increase induced boost, boom, right? Where we've malinvested and overconsumed in all types of categories. We've built a bunch of shit that we did not want, right? And we've consumed a bunch of stuff that we actually should not have, right? And this was great, right? We had a huge party, basically. It's just above midnight now. The party is basically over. Unfortunately, next comes the hangover. Next comes the bust. With the realignment of all that capital away from the unproductive ventures and towards the actually desired and actually productive and profitable ventures again. This is a very, very, very painful period. You see this in many areas. Example, just from a couple of years ago, Venezuela, or even right now. A huge fiat empire collapsed tremendously, and all of a sudden, individuals are shooting each other over a barrel of water, right? This gets really, really bad because there is no more capital available. There are no goods more to be consumed. Everything is gone. Everything is burned to the ground and stolen from the looters. There's literally nothing to eat and no wood to burn for heat and warmth in your shelter. Unfortunately, contrarian to the earlier collapses of the empires in Venezuela and Zimbabwe or the Weimar Republic or Turkey or any other of the numerous cases of hyperinflation, this time it is a global hyperinflation. Where every shitcoin of every country is expanding in money supply at a rate that is unheard of. Over 50% of the global monetary base has increased in only the first half of 2020, 6 months, and we've already increased the base money M0 supply by 50%. Absolutely horrendous. The highest hyperinflation that we've ever seen on a global scale happening right now and exponentially picking up speed with further money printing at rates unheard of. This is shaping up to be quite very fucking bad. I hope that, first of all, humankind as in its entirety will survive the crash that is coming. But not just that, of course, I hope that individuals can, despite that chaos and despite that tyranny, manifest themselves to their utmost delight and utilize liberating technologies to live a delightful life and to be happy. And I do think that individuals have the power of enjoyment and happiness even in the most dire of situations, specifically when they have again force multipliers, weapons that they can actually use to express themselves, even in the midst of danger and tyranny. Weapons like Bitcoin or of course real weapons in meatspace are extremely, extremely vitally important for individuals in this coming totality, as again it seems to be shaping up to a dire situation, it is again the individual's responsibility to take action and to defend himself and his loved ones.
Right. Along those lines of wanting to defend ourselves and defend our loved ones, one of the things that I know you've been very keen on and thought a lot about, and I've been thinking a lot about myself, is this idea of citadel theory. It makes sense that as chaos starts to pervade society, as the realization of hyperinflation and the collapse of the fiat empire, as you described, as the chaos starts to pervade a lot of the world, there will likely be people will be gathering themselves, their loved ones in a more localized fashion to protect their property, to protect their lives. And to me, that's kind of the idea of a citadel. Like in medieval times, these communities and villages, farms and agricultural society, they had all this thriving community outside the walls of the citadel and all the farmland and everything. But there was always the mountaintop walled in citadel where should an army or other dangerous looters come through, the people could always retreat to the walled citadel where they had stored food and weapons and shelter. So what does that look like for you? I don't expect you to divulge too many details, obviously, with your own personal preparations. I'd love to get your perspective on that.
Yes, you know, it's such an important part of life, because fundamentally it's nice to have a box that does not leak, right? That is dry, that is somewhat warm, where you somewhat control if other monkeys can come in or not. Right? It's kind of nice to have your own space. And the box is usually a good thing. So then the question is, what type of box do you want, right? And how do you design this? Where do you put the box, right? And how do you interact with the boxes of other individuals, basically? You know, this is, again, nothing new. It's not that Bitcoiners figured out that citadels are a nice idea, right? To have a secure dwelling place in meat space.
Right.
This is nothing novel. But of course, it's very, very important. You know, your individual sovereignty, your bodily manifestation in meat space is one of the early parts of this, right? This is how you actually manifest yourself in meat space, right? Is your bodily form. So you have to take responsibility for this, right? And if you do have the desire to be a sovereign individual where you can manifest yourself in meat space according to your desires without being harassed by any other third party, well, you have to defend yourself, right? You have to find a secure meat space location where you are actually sovereign, right? Where nobody comes to fuck with you. And to have a secure location is very useful. So aspects like access control, right? To have walls around and gates, right? And identification checks at access points and so on. To control the number of individuals that can enter and leave, right? Is extremely useful. Of course, weaponry defenses. So to apply force to individuals who try to gain access to your citadel, who don't want to have it, or whom you don't want to have in your citadel. All of these aspects are extremely important. But one thing that I would like to highlight is a strategy of rather than, you know, to stay and fight and to shoot yourself out of a trouble in your citadel and hide. So rather than a strategy of hiding behind your walls and shooting yourself out of a problem, the strategy of being mobile and de-escalating a conflict. Right. So I think this is really, really interesting, because if you have a problem with your neighbor, right, if the music is too loud and your neighbor complains, but you still want to continue to party, and if you would stay in the same place, right, and continue the party, he calls the cops and applies force to you. However, if you are mobile, right, you can de-escalate this conflict very easily by just moving to a different place and continuing the party over there, and your neighbor will no longer be pissed. So the aspect of mobility is useful to de-escalate the conflict and to increase the mean time till harassment, right? To increase the time in between conflicts, so to live a peaceful life and a profitable and prosperous life as long as reasonable. So the aspect of having a mobile citadel where you can pack up, right, where you can take all of your capital, where you can take your box, right, and place the box somewhere else. That is such a super interesting concept, because all of a sudden you can have your secure dwelling place, but in a meat space location of your choosing, right? And you can actually decide where do you want to wake up the next morning, you can put the box wherever you want. And if that ability of movement is given, then your options increase tremendously. And this is, of course, great in defense, right, to de-escalate a conflict. But it's also fantastic just for a joyful life, right? To be able to see multiple different beautiful places on this glorious planet, and to experience different types of nature, different types of cultures, and to interact with different individuals, I think this is quite a joyful life, right? So traveling is nice.
Sure.
And to combine this in a lifestyle where you can keep your citadel with yourself, right? Where you have your box and your stuff, and you can actually carry your capital to different meet spaces, locations easily. This is such a super interesting strategy that has been very successful for me.
Very, very interesting. Yeah, that is a definitely a different approach. I feel like when most people talk about citadels, they're picturing themselves as like a rugged mountain man out in like Montana or something with a cabin in the woods, you know, and a rifle. But this is a kind of a different approach. I'm definitely interested in hearing more about that. I know you're mentioning like container homes, and I was thinking that it would be cool if there was sort of a network of properties around the world where people gathered their like shipping container homes and live together, and then they can move their container home to a new location very easily if they needed to. It'd be an interesting setup for like a communal style living.
Yes, exactly. I think there are multiple nice aspects to this. You know, first of all, you realize that your capital is no longer attached to the ground, right? It's no longer locked to mm-hmm. one specific area, but you can pack up your capital very cheaply and move it to a different location, right? So all of a sudden you can be, you can own your home without owning the land, right? That's super mm-hmm. interesting, right? Again, just because it increases your options of where to wake up the next morning. And of course, that aspect of being able to gather at the place, right? So we have one piece of land where multiple individuals put their boxes, basically. And the interesting thing is here that they can live together and collaborate together while each of them still contains the ownership of his own box, right? They have very modular property rights approach. This means if anyone has a problem, they can leave very easily, very cheaply by just removing their box. Right, and they can pack up all that is theirs without further escalating the conflict. Right, compare that when building a stationary house that is solid on the ground, and you have multiple apartments in that one house. Now, what if one person wants to, disagrees with something and wants to get out? Well, are you going to remove that one, stone box all of a sudden? It's going to be very difficult. But with a modular approach, where each individual owns his own box. But still, we can have that ability to basically stack boxes, right, and put a bunch of individuals together in a close proximity, so to increase the division of labor and the specialization and just, the social life, to still have that while individual property rights are very well defined and very well protected, and where the enforcement of changing your will about your property is very cheap and efficient. I think this is a very, very exciting development in how to gather amongst individuals. And I'm very curious to see how it further develops.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating. I wonder, have you ever, who Buckminster Fuller is, right?
Yes.
Okay. He had early, there's a documentary on YouTube about him and some of his earlier ideas and how he kind of got started. Before he invented the geodesic dome, he was very focused on creating very cheap modular housing that was secure as well as able to be transported very easily and also very, very robust in its architectural design. One of the ideas that he had that is pretty wild was it's basically a pole that sits in the ground, and then the rest of the structure kind of suspends from the top of the mass. So all of the weight of the structure is kind of hanging on a central mass, and you can have multiple levels of rooms that are around this mass. And the way he designed it was that it could be collapsed very easily and picked up by a helicopter and moved to a new location. I thought that was just like really fascinating. Obviously, it was like it never got traction, but he was just one of those guys who went down these things. It was like, look, guys, we can manufacture these houses and it could be so cheap, but then the bankers would be left out of a job issuing mortgages for tract homes.
Yeah, exactly. And the aspect that I'm most excited about is, you know, individuals' creativity to come up with interesting ways of building secure dwelling places and to build nice places to meet, right? That are secure, that are private, that are free, and that are fun. So I think that will be quite very, very interesting to see all the nice new and novel aspects that we can come up with here. It's, I think, also a huge... a huge business, a huge market. Already in the Fiat Empire, right? There was a gigantic bubble in housing, right, and real estate, mainly because this is where New Link. Yeah. So in the Fiat Empire, there's a huge malinvestment and overconsumption in real estate, right, and in housing, this has led to quite a huge boom. And of course, the following bust. But nevertheless, housing is such an important and interesting project. And precisely in a bust, we have to reallocate capital and we have to do it efficiently, right? And we realize that we have invested way too much and we don't have the capital to finish our investments. So we have to tear down the ruins, right? And use the old stones to build something new. And this means that we have to build something based on very strict limitations in our resources and supplies. And whenever there is that high amount of uneasiness, right, that huge problem where you have to build something but you have barely anything to do it with, right, then you come up with ingenious solutions. And I hope that in the upcoming bust that there are enough genius individuals with that creative entrepreneurial spark to come up with more more efficient ways to solve problems, and including, of course, how to secure dwelling places and sleeping quarters, as this is naturally a very important and very pressing problem for individuals to be solved.
Right. Right. Max, this is so good. I want to be respectful of your time. I could go on for hours just talking about this stuff. But same with me. Do you have a hard cap on how long you can go?
I think one of the longest things that I've done was something like 8 or 9 hours straight.
Wow.
Like of nonstop being on air. But the longest live stream in general was recently actually at the Hackers Congress, 58-hour live stream nonstop. But fortunately, that was not just me, but also a bunch of other amazing podcasters doing that. But so my limit for talking about Bitcoin is very, very high.
Right. 100%. I wouldn't have it any other way. This is a great starting point. Obviously, I'd love to continue the conversation and have many more discussions like this, because there's so many different things to explore in this space. And I really appreciate your perspective to bring things to more of a conclusion. I'm wondering if you could paint a picture, like if you could just wave a magic wand. What is the ideal future that you envision for yourself and for your loved ones? What are you striving to create?
That's a very, very interesting question, of course. And I would say it's a world where I know what I want, right? Which is a very, very difficult question, actually. So to learn and acquire the skills on actually discovering my deep and true desires is something that is very, very important. So hopefully in that potential world, I got that figured out. And then of course the just that aspect of, finding ingenious solutions to problems, not anything specific, but just having that creative spark, of actually creating value, right? Of figuring out how to do the same thing with less, or how to achieve more with the same amount of resources, right? How to build more beautiful and delightful things. This creative spark is so important, and it's what makes this life worthwhile, I would say, right? To be able to create and to manifest something new and something wonderful according to your will is I think a delightful way of living. so that ought to be there as well. And of course that aspect of, you know, responsibility, both the good and the bad sides of it, right? So responsibility meaning to live with the consequences of your own actions, right? So this is the positive sides of when you have been profitable, and when you have allocated your resources efficiently, right? You gain to relish in the treasures of the harvest, basically. You've worked your ass off, and now you can enjoy what you've created. But of course, on the negative sides, right? This means when you're not productive, when you don't know what you want, and when you don't allocate your resources efficiently, well, then you consume your capital. You eat yourself up, right? You become less rather than more. You're no longer expanding, but you're subtracting yourself. This is why I think this thrive to create something, to be productive, to fix a problem is so important. And that this aspect is understood and treasured and strived for is I think another of these important pillars.
Yeah, that really does change the approach to work when you look at it from that perspective, where instead of in the traditional fiat world, we're looking at work as we've got to like trade our time to someone else and get paid dollars to pay our bills. And it just becomes this monotonous slave-like behavior. As I hear you talking, it really does resonate with me, where there is this desire and you really feel alive, like when you're in that creative state of discovering a problem and working on a very tangible solution and collaborating with other people to solve it. That's what makes things interesting.
It's like, this is what it means to be human, right? This is literally it, right? This is human action.
For sure.
To be in a state of uneasiness, to be suffering in the current moment, to have problems, right? But to have that genius, the creative, the logos, to figure out how to fix the problem, right? And how to improve your current situation. And then not just to think about it and to dream about it, but to actually manifest it and to act and to do, right? And to fix the problem. And then to live prosperous in the future. This is what it means to be human, right? Yes, it is exhilarating. It is a absolutely delightful feeling to be in such a state.
Max, I'm with you, man. I'm really grateful to have this conversation. It's truly a breath of fresh air. It's just great to hear from you and hear your perspective. I really appreciate your time. Is there anything that you'd like to share about yourself, about something you're working on, where people can find you and learn more about what you have going on?
Yeah, so in general, a lot of the my personal information, specifically contact information on how to reach out and to arrange a conversation and to speak about important topics and to have a good conversation, actually, all that can be found at towardsliberty.com, which is also an archive of knowledge that I've curated. Towardsliberty.com. Basically it's a kind of a book recommendation list of some of the books that I've accumulated over the years and knowledge that I found to be incredibly invaluable and that I highly recommend individuals to consider to acquire as well. Here with a bunch of resources to praxeology and economics, and of course Bitcoin and cypherpunk, as well as ethics and natural law and individuality. So I think it's a meaningful rabbit hole to go down to. And again, as well, the contact information is on towardsliberty.com as well.
Great. Max, once again, thank you. I look forward to talking to you.
Yes, John, thank you very much again for the invitation here to come on the podcast. I really enjoyed the conversation, and especially your questions were quite thoughtful, so thanks a lot. And yeah, I'm looking forward to further collaborating and curating and creating more knowledge here in the Bitcoin rabbit hole.